Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. This is America's Great Loop Cruisers Association, our weekly blog radio show. With us, as usual, is Steve Cromer, who works on technical issues and a lot of customer service. And I'm Janice Cromer, and I am the director, which basically means customer service. Before we get started, I'd like to thank our Admiral sponsors for their wonderful support: Curtis Stokes and Associates, Dog River Marina, Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guides and Magazines, and Skipper Bob Publications. America's Great Loop Cruisers Association, or AGLCA as we call ourselves, is an organization of people who share the adventure and the camaraderie of the Great Loop. For those not familiar with the Great Loop, it's the continuous waterway that circles the eastern portion of North America. Our association was formed to disseminate information about this awesome journey. For those wishing to learn more about the Great Loop, please visit our website at www.greatloop.org. Non-members can join the association at the site, or anyone can sign up for one of our new one-day seminars. They're designed to give you a wealth of information about this cruising lifestyle that is the Great Loop. Our guest hosts this week are Patty and Robert Mitchell of Montana. The Mitchells completed their loop in 2009 and are also a harbor host for our association. The subject this week is mooring balls, and Patty and Robert will tell us about their recent experiences in Florida. During the show, please feel free to call in with any comments or questions. The toll-free number is 877-497-1815. Welcome, Robert and Patty. I really appreciate your being on our show this morning.
Well, good morning, Janice. How are you this morning?
We're doing really well. Hot in Charleston, but that's the summer, so we just are used to it. Patty and Robert, I think we'll both be joining the discussion. And Robert, if you're ready to get started, tell us why moorings versus a slip or anchoring.
We like to anchor more than half of the time.
Really? Okay.
And mooring is kind of a hybrid between anchoring and a slip. The biggest reason that we like moorings is they still give you the freedom. You're not just right next to somebody else. And when you look out your stateroom windows, you can see some water and some varying scenery rather than just seeing docks. It is usually quite a bit cheaper than getting a dock. There are times when you need to be in a dock situation, but last year the river system across the Gulf and went to Florida, spent time in a number of moorages that we'll talk about today.
Uh-huh.
And we've done this before. We're kind of self-taught about it because I grew up on a boat in Galveston Bay, and there's no moorings there.
Uh-huh.
There's no moorings on the river system. And you just have to kind of read, and that's what we did until you can figure out how to do this.
And another advantage to mooring that we like, too, is that most of them down in Florida, for instance, offer pump-out service, too. They come by every week.
At the mooring itself, really?
Yes. Yes, the moorings we'll talk about today all have pump outs, and that's something that we really like. Now, we've been to the Bahamas and used the mooring. There's one mooring field that's pretty well known in Little Harbor in Abacos, and we've used that. But there's some dangers to that. That's not a very well inspected mooring field, and I watched a 55-foot boat break away from the mooring there. But the moorings that we'll talk about today in Florida are all, most of them are city-owned. There's certain things that they look for, and you feel pretty safe that you're on those moorings.
I know nothing about moorings, so I may be asking stupid questions, and I apologize if I'm insulting anyone out there. Well, first of all, how close are the mooring balls, basically? You said, you know, you have water. You can see out of your stateroom. The mooring balls are not typically very close?
It varies from mooring field to mooring field. But usually there'll be about 100 feet in between the mooring fields and in between the buoys and in the fields that we'll talk about. The fields we're going to talk about today is Key West, Marathon, Fort Walton Beach, Fort Walton City, and Sarasota. And those mooring fields are all generally set up in the same ways.
Now, when you say inspected, what do they need to be inspected for, that the mooring ball itself is stationary?
The Key West, I watched an inspection in Key West. They actually dove on the anchor, which is a pyramidal concrete base that's down underwater. Then they checked the connection from the anchor to the mooring ball. From the mooring ball, then there's a pennant line, and they checked that pennant line from the mooring ball out to the end of the pennant line, which is where you pick up the mooring. So they actually visually inspect it for chafing and wear. And when I talk to the other mooring fields, they do similar things.
Now, stupidity again showing. Just exactly what is a pennant?
Well, every mooring field is set up a little bit different. And I may be calling people on the East Coast who I've read about have a pretty well-defined definition of what moorings are. But
uh-huh.
As you get into Florida, there's the terms seem to be pretty ambiguous. I call the pennant line the line that goes from the mooring ball to where you would hook up. Now, there are some moorings that you would go right to the top of the buoy. None of these fields I'm talking about are set up that way. All of these fields have a line from the buoy that you pick up.
And it's floating.
The buoy is floating.
And the line is
sometimes.
Okay, so the line itself comes from the buoy, and it's
yes.
Their line, not your line.
That's correct. Now,
and then you put the line onto one of your cleats?
Yeah, I'll go through that here in just a minute, but that's correct. What we do is go, you attach that pennant line with a line of your own to a cleat or to a cleat system. The important thing to think about when you're doing this is that it is different than docking in some ways, but there's still a lot of boat craftsmanship that you have to do as far as figuring out the current and the waves as you approach the buoy, and you always want to approach it in an upwind or up current situation, because you're going to snag that, what I call a pennant line, and your people on the Northeast would probably correct me on that term, but that's the term I'll use for the line from the buoy that's laying in the water that you're going to pick up. When you approach that buoy, you see which way the current and the waves are taking that line. Now, the thing that we have to remember when we're mooring is we have a heavy boat. We're about 44,000 pounds. We're a 48-foot Tollycraft.
Uh-huh.
So you're not going to stop the motion of that boat by just grabbing onto a line. It would be the same thing as grabbing onto a dock as you pass it.
Uh-huh.
So you have to be very safety conscious. The first thing that you're going to do when you do start this exercise is it's my wife and I, so both of us put on our life jackets.
Thank you.
And then I go down on the deck and she runs the boat. Now, this is after I have made a pass or two around the buoy and determined the condition and the wind, the condition of the current and the wind.
Uh-huh.
And which way the pennant is running. then what I usually do is come alongside the buoy, toward the midships of the buoy, and try to kill all speed on the boat and all drift on the boat, and then take a boat hook and catch the pennant line. Now I'm down on the deck, and I'm talking to Patty, and she's running the boat. Now, there's a couple of things that people ought to be aware of on safety. I've already said that about wearing life jackets. But the other thing is if you go overboard, you have to make sure that whoever you've got running the boat understands that there's propellers on your boat, and we don't want to get the propellers and the person that just went overboard tangled up. So that you just have to be slow, careful, and patient about this operation. It's taken me as long as 3 or 4 times to snag the line, get the line hooked up to my line, and then onto the boat. And if it pulls on me too much, I just let it go. And then I come back and start over again. So patience is a big part of mooring.
Yeah, don't let it pull you overboard.
Yeah, the boat weighs 44,000 pounds. If it's moving away from the buoy at any speed at all, you're not going to be able to hold anything. And even in normal current drift and wind drift, you can be, pretty challenged to hold on to the boat
and with the line. And that's why I don't do the snagging part, because it does require some upper body strength, and I run the boat, and Robert does the snagging.
Now the other part of, once you snag the pennant line, usually it will have a loop on the end of it.
Uh-huh.
We make up our own mooring bridle, and I made it up out of 7/8 inch, what I call hard lay nylon, meaning it's the pretty rough nylon line with the hard lay twist rather than the soft line that we usually use for mooring. And when I mailed up my mooring bridle was that I took a 1-inch pin shackle, screw pin shackle, and then I put that screw pin shackle in the middle of this line, and I've got a 30-foot line, so 15 feet on each side of it has a line, and you've got the screw pin shackle in the middle. So what I'm doing is catching the pennant off of the floating buoy.
Uh-huh.
I have the loop in my hand, and I take my screw pin shackle and screw it into the end of the pennant line. Now I'm in the midship of the boat. Now, as I work my way to the bow, which is where I'm going to eventually put this mooring bridle, I've got a number of cleats that if I see the boat's drifting too much, I can just snag a cleat and then arrest the drift or arrest the wind as it's trying to take us. And then I work my way to the front of the boat, and then I attach my bridle to the two forward cleats. And I don't attach it to the anchor capstan. Now, anchor capstan, a lot of us use that as a main attach point for a lot of our anchoring, but really it's not the right thing to do because it's not really made to take a lot of beating as you would be on a mooring.
More complicated than trying to dock at a slip.
It's different. I'm not going to say it's more complicated because, as all of us know who docked in currents and winds, there are times they have to use spring lines to get on or off. That can be a pretty complicated affair as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I guess my emphasis here is, when you first do this, don't be afraid of it, and just be careful and be patient, because you'll eventually get it hooked up like you want. And once you get it there, the boat's very stable because you're going to pull by attaching to the bow of the boat. The boat's going to weather vane right into the wind or the current or the combination thereof.
Uh-huh.
And you may be there for a week or so. Now, So once you're attached to the bow of the boat and to the mooring ball, and then I watch it for the next hour. Not unlike anchorage, I do the same thing in anchorage.
Uh-huh.
Is that once you put your anchor out, I just don't walk away and leave it. I watch it and see what's happening, and you know what other things may be going on that cause us to lose our anchorage or lose the mooring ball. But in particular, what you're doing in a mooring field is seeing what your distance is from the other boats. And the length of that pennant and the length of your mooring bridle can be adjusted to keep you within a circle, keeps you out of the other boats. Theoretically, all boats will swing the same way. Theoretically.
Why do you say theoretically?
Well, because if you have a sailboat that's right next to us with a large mast and a lot of windage, or that they may lay to the wind way differently than our boat does, which is a taller. So they may point in a different direction, and especially if you have a current and a wind combination that may be fighting each other. You may have some boats that have more resistance underwater than we do, and therefore the current will swing them faster and in a different arc on their mooring ball than in ours. So I am aware of that, and most fields will criticize you if you put out too long of a pennant line or mooring bridle.
And you'll have too much room to swing.
That's correct. That's correct.
I think we need to take a quick break, if you don't mind, Robert and Patty. We have a commercial from our commander sponsor, Heartland Boating.
Okay.
Heartland Boating Magazine and Quimby's Cruising Guide are your essential inland cruising companions. For more than 50 years, Quimby's has been the go-to guide for cruisers on 20 inland rivers, including the Illinois, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Tentom, with data on marinas, fuel stops, locks, and dams, and more. Heartland Boating Magazine captures the freshwater lifestyle with entertaining and inspiring articles. Its content focuses on the people, places, products, and events that impact boating in Middle America. Learn more about these publications at www.heartlandboating.com.
Thanks, Beth. Okay, Robert, where would you like to pick up?
Well, I think the other thing to talk about a little bit is just the lifestyle of mooring. Now, we moored for about 3 weeks in Key West. We were planning to spend a month there, and we paid for a month's worth of moorage. But Key West was one of those places that has got some funny situations in that there's people that will blast right through the middle of the mooring field, seem to take the light in waking the boats. And if there is a north wind in Key West, if you're in the Garrison Bight, which is the only mooring field, then you can be subject to 2 to 3 foot waves out of the only thing between you and the North Pole is the Alabama coast, which is thousands of miles away. So you've got a lot of water that can fetch up there.
Uh-huh.
So that can be pretty rough. One of the things that we do is we have a water maker, so we make our own water. We don't need to go into water. We usually run the generator about 2 hours a day to charge our batteries and cook meals and to run the water maker. The other thing that is available on all of these mooring fields is pump out, and the pump out boat usually comes by about once a week, and that's a very good service. That really makes it very civilized. All of the places we're talking about have good MiFi reception, so you're able to get on the computers and do work, which is important to us. And then the The other thing is that you're dinghy in, and a dinghy, if you're going to moor out, you have to have a pretty good dinghy and a pretty dependable motor. And because you don't want to get halfway in and then something happen and you need to row. Some of these places, it's a long row to the bank, so you need to have a pretty good motor. All of these places, there are some better than others, but they all have dinghy docks or dinghy availability. And then there's things to do on the shore, either shopping or restaurants, or there are things to see. So you get the
Is Maggie usually with you when you're mooring?
Yes, Maggie is usually with us. So you know she'll go in with us every day. You know that we go in on the dinghy. And, she thinks that the dinghy really is her boat. So.
And have you trained her to go on board, or do you need to take her, you know, to the dock twice a day or whatever?
Yeah, we don't usually take her twice a day. We'll take her in once a day, and then we've trained her to go on the boat.
Okay.
So it's a fairly civilized lifestyle. It's just a little different than being on the dock. And it's a, you know, the inconvenience factor is the fact that you, to go anyplace, do anything, you're going to have to get on the dinghy and go.
And, of course, that's true with anchoring also.
Say again?
I said that's true when you're anchored also, obviously.
Right. That's very true when you're anchoring. It's the same thing as anchoring, only I think I would say that you've got, on the mooring field, you've got maybe a little better sense of, what would I say, you feel a little better about a mooring field that's been inspected.
Security.
A little better feeling of security.
Security.
Because,
okay.
And the dinghy, most people, they charge for you to come and dock your dinghy. But if you're in a mooring field, you can dock at that facility's dinghy. That's part of your cost or part of your service.
Yeah, the other loopers that use this, and we ran into a lot of loopers in Marathon that use Marathon all the time. They find things, and that community generates a lot of interest. With their cruisers, net, and other things, it's a totally different experience, and it's one that you should, you know, try to enjoy and see if you really like that or not.
Can I ask an average cost for a month? I mean, is there such a thing as an average cost?
Yeah, I looked at some of the costs in Key West or in Marathon, it was $22 a day, and it seems like to me it was about $300 a month.
Uh-huh.
About the same thing in Key West, about $300 a month. But you can go on Active Captain and look at those. You'll get a review that will update those prices.
Okay.
But generally, that's kind of where you are. Now, Key West City mooring field is $10 a day. It's just a different price structure. But it's the monthly rate, as it breaks down to around that $300 number for our boat, which is a 48-foot boat.
Okay. On the loop, there really aren't very many locations that have, I mean, I think, that have mooring balls. I know Florida, and in the discussion forum, there was a mention of the Bahamas, but would you normally find mooring balls anywhere else on the loop?
I am sure that they do up on the East Coast because you know that's where a lot of my information came from with reading posts from people who moored up there.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. But Florida Stewart has a large mooring field now. So as you work your way across the Okeechobee, you know you can moor at both ends of the Okeechobee now.
Huh.
And, you know, there's a significant difference in cost. The cheapest that I could find a place for a dock in Stewart was $1,000 a month. And for mooring, you can do it for $300 a month. So that's a significant difference, but there is a difference in the services that you're that are available to. You get what you pay for.
Like you said, it's very dependent on your particular lifestyle and what you prefer.
Yes,
you know, we've been at some marinas that, like you said, you know, you feel like your next door neighbor is in your stateroom. They're so close.
Yes, and there are times when, quite frankly, that's not bad. If you spend a month out on a mooring and then you get to where you crave talking to somebody, it's not bad to come to the marina and be able to go to the dock party at 4:30 and, you know, finally get exposed to people again. It's just a combination of things, and this is one of the options that a cruiser has.
Sure.
We're probably going to go to the Bahamas this next winter.
Uh-huh.
And we intend to anchor aloft with a 48-foot boat in the Bahamas, and anchorages have been problems. So I think I've now finally got it solved by the size of it and design of the new anchor that I just bought, and the
uh-huh.
fact that now we have water maker. A water maker gives you a lot of freedom because then you're not forced to go back into the dock every week and pick up water. And we're able to make 40 gallons a day when we're running that generator for 2 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I was curious, do you have a washer and dryer aboard or have to go into a dock to take care of laundry and provisioning, obviously?
No, that was part of my constraints about cruising because I didn't want to go back to college and go to the laundromat. So, we have an apartment size, which is considered full size, washer and dryer. We also have a dishwasher, so we're not roughing it.
I've heard many boats have washers and dryers, but dishwashers are really rare. So that's a good thing to have. We're almost out of time. Just very quickly, any special hazards to be aware of? I guess it's really no different than anchoring.
No, it's no different than anchoring. You just have to really be careful on this approach to handling the bridles.
Uh-huh.
The understanding that you've got a boat drifting over the buoy and how to arrest that drift. And then, again, the key thing is patience and then wear your life jacket. And if you go overboard, be aware of where the propeller is. And if you go overboard, holler loudly that you're going overboard. If she doesn't know where you are and it's just silent out there, it doesn't help a lot. So I think the key thing about mooring is be patient and understand you're dealing with a large mass, which is the boat that's moving through a medium of water that doesn't offer much friction. So the only friction that you're going to, the way that you stop the drift and set is with that line. And you just have to be cognizant of what happens if you get your thumb caught between the line and the cleat. So just slow and easy and careful.
Slow easy. Steve, do you have any questions or comments?
No, I don't.
Okay, well then, Patty and Robert, unless you'd like something else to add, I'm going to thank you tremendously. That was a great show. When I first scheduled it, again, not knowing anything about mooring, I thought, well, it's going to be hard-pressed to have this show run more than about 15 minutes, and you've given us so much information. I really appreciate it.
And anybody, you know, they're free to call us or to email us, and we'll, you know, Robert can tell you more about it.
Well, thank you very, very much. If anybody wants to get in touch with Robert or Patty, of course, I mentioned yesterday in the discussion forum, we've got the membership directory app that you can download and find them very easily. Or, again, you can use our webpage. There's a real-time searchable membership directory. Patty and Robert, stay well. Let us know when you're out on the water again. And, as usual, safe cruising.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.